but she's watching the videos courtesy of you. We are in Yehoshua Perikhav Bet, chapter 22. We started last week this return to the story part of Sefer Yehoshua. We outlined the Perik. It starts with the send-off of Reuben, God, half of Menashe, and then continues with crisis. So remember that the major challenges they're facing at this stage are the challenges of maintaining unity as they spread out. We talked about the Shvatim and why you would want to have a system that emphasizes Shevet identity as opposed to national identity, whether it's out of practicality, because this allows for easy governance of the individual groups, whether it's because there's some issue of loyalty to tribe, whether there's some kind of tribal identity that unifies each group. However you look at it, there's no question that they maintain a serious loyalty to tribe. We talked about the issue as well of religious identity as they spread far from the Mishkan. And then all these challenges are multiplied if you're going across the Yarden. You now have a river between you and the rest of the population. So that also has within it an old question, which we talked about a few chapters ago, but it'll come up in the course of this chapter, which is the question of how we view the land on the eastern side of the Yarden at all. Is it part of Israel or is it not part of Israel? And we noted that on the one hand, it's part of Israel because they're given land there and they're told that the laws are going to apply there and so forth. They're separating Ari Miklat, cities of refuge, for it. There are cities of the Levim that are going to be there. And then on the other hand, we saw reasons why we should say it's not part of Israel. Moshe is there. He's buried there, but he gets in there, even though he's not supposed to make it into the land. There's a Medrash, the Sifra points out that the laws of Shemitah begin not when they get into the land on the eastern side of the Yarden, but when they cross the Yarden. That's something that is going to also matter as we get into this story. So we started and we read the opening psukim of the parak. We saw the opening sentences, and we saw some things that were odd. We saw that, first of all, it was very wordy in the description of what they did. We go to the beginning of Parak Chafed and Yehoshua's speech to them. He says, Moshe Eved Hashem, three times in the course of a four-sentence speech, emphasizing Moshe's authority for their going back over the Yarden. We had special treatment for half of Menashe. Right, Yehoshua calls Reuven God half of Menashe, and he tells them that you listened to your covenant, you fulfilled the word of your pact with Moshe, your pact with me, you did not abandon your brethren, Hashem has now settled things for them, and everything is great. And then in Pasuk Zion, after having blessed the tribes and sent them apparently to the eastern side of the Yarden, it then says that Moshe gave half of Menashe land on the eastern side, and he also gave the other half of Menashe land on the western side, and he sent them home, and he blessed them, and he said, "Make sure that you take assets and split it with your brothers." So why is half of Menashe getting this special treatment? So we started to look at it pasuk by pasuk, and we said that first of all, the opening pasuk, "Az Yikra Yehoshua," then Yehoshua called, but it's written with this Az Yikra, like Az Yashir, right, this week's Parsha. It makes it sound like it's future tense, and we said that it tends to be a poetic language that's used. It tends to be this sort of elevated language, suggesting that something that's going on here is very special, as they're sending this group to go back to the eastern side of the Yarden. It marks certainly a new stage in the development of the Jewish people. So Yehoshua calls them, and he has a conversation with them. Out of curiosity, where does this conversation take place?
That same location.
Which is? We don't know. It doesn't say. The only thing that we do know is that in Pasuk Tet, they're going to have something go on in Shiloh. So Malbim says the initial conversation is indeed Har Ephraim. It's in Timnat Serach. It's in Yehoshua's city. In other words, when it says in the opening pasuk, "Az Yikra Yehoshua," then Yehoshua summoned them. He summoned them to his home. He has his base of operations in Timnat Serach. He summoned the 2.5 tribes. He says, "Come to the prime minister's house, or whatever you want to call it." And that's where we're going to have our meeting. And he says to them, "You've kept your end of the bargain." But we said there's wordiness here. If you take a look at pasuk bet, sentences 2 and 3. right? What is especially, what stands out there as being unusual? Unusually wordy. Well, the Eved Hashem was one, correct? What else? Well, how many times does it say Tziviti, actually? Two different things, right? If you read it carefully, as Malbim does and as Abarbanel does, you see that there are actually multiple things here, multiple elements, multiple commands. Number one, you guarded that which Moshe told you to do. Number two, you listened to my voice in everything that I commanded you. So that's one duality, right? What Moshe told you to do and what I told you to do. I didn't know there was a difference. That's number one. Number two, in Pasuk Gimel, you did not abandon your brethren all this time. And you guarded the preserve of the command of Hashem your God. Sorry? Well, if you take them collectively, there are three different loyalties. There's Moshe, Yoshua, Hashem. But really what you have are two sets of two, I think. In other words, the first is Moshe and Yoshua. And the second is you were loyal to your brethren and you were loyal to God. So the question then is, why are you, you know, breaking this down in this way? And Malbim suggests, if you take a look at source number one, and we did note this way, way back in the beginning of the Sefer, but that's so long ago that no one's responsible to remember that. He says, "Hatnai shehisna Moshe and bnei Reuven ubnei Gad, lo haya rak sheyelchu chalutzim ad achar kibush." The initial condition that Moshe set, if you go back into the Chumash, is that they should go be warriors until the conquest is over. Rak Moshe, and it shouldn't be Moshe, I believe it's a mistake, it should say Yehoshua in the text, that's why I added it in brackets. Hosiv v'tzivo, sam she'amdu shama gam achar ad achar hachiluk. Yehoshua said, I want you to stand till the land is divided up. So in other words, their deal with Moshe expired 7 years ago. Right? With the understanding that we've talked about, that it was 7 years of the conquest and then 7 years of the division of the land. So they should have been able to go home already. Yehoshua is thanking them in Pasuk Bet, for their loyalty to him, in addition to their loyalty to Moshe. But Abarbanel is the one who goes further with this. And Abarbanel says, in the opening Pasuk, it is indeed, as Malbim says, right? Malbim, keep in mind the chronology, because I haven't reviewed it in a while, Abarbanel is the end of the 15th century, very beginning of the 16th century. Malbim is 18th century. So it's anachronistic for me to say that Abarbanel follows what Malbim says. It's the other way around. But the same idea of deal with Moshe and deal with Yoshua, number one. But number two, he says, you kept your brotherhood to the nation and you were loyal to God because you stayed with the Aron. You made sure to stay with the Aron to protect the Aron of Hashem until there was a Mishkan in Shiloh. However, this split of your loyalty to your brethren and your loyalty to God is going to be the theme of the chapter. So keep this latter duality, this loyalty to everybody else and loyalty to God, keep that in mind as we read what develops here. He says to them, so I want you to go home now to the eastern side of the Yarden and make sure to be good. The language that Yehoshua uses here in this instruction in Pasuk Dalet, Pasuk Hey, is almost exactly the language of Moshe in Devarim Perek Gimel Pasuk Chaf. I was going to include it on the sheet, but I ran out of space. So since not everybody here has a Tanakh, just looking at the Pasuk itself, the language of V'atahiniach Hashem Elokechem la'achechem is almost exactly what Moshe said, Ad asher yaniach Hashem la'achechem kochem, for example. If someone wants to read it out, they can read it out. Right? It should start Ad asher yaniach. Right. So you see there, Ad asher yaniach Hashem Elokechem kachem is parallel to Heniach Hashem Elokechem la'achichem. Right? In other words, the Pasuk in Devarim, Moshe said, you get to do this until God settles things for your brethren. Here he says, now God has settled things for your brethren. And then he continued, that which God has promised to give you, Be'ever HaYarden. So this pasuk ends, the land Asher Nasan Lachem, Moshe Eved Hashem, Be'ever HaYarden, the land that Moshe gave you on the eastern side of the Yarden. So the so what this means is just that Yeshua is still quoting Moshe. And that's going to be true in much of this chapter. When Yeshua speaks, you can hear Moshe's voice. Which is important, because Yeshua, at this stage, 14 years into his reign, having fought all the wars, having performed all the miracles and so forth, you could have said maybe he's his own man at this point. In the beginning of the Perek, in the beginning of the book, there was a lot of nervousness. How do you take over for Moshe? Yeah. But how do you take over for Moshe, who did everything? I mean, he was the rainmaker and then some. For this nation, he brought bread from the heavens. He brought machos. He split the sea. He did the thing with the man. You know, everything about them has been centered around the identity of Moshe. Yeshua can't possibly be his own man in the beginning of the Sefer. Everything is about Moshe appointed me. Therefore, you should listen. But it's Moshe who's the Eved Hashem. Moshe is the one. 14 years later, I might have expected that Yeshua has proven himself. They've had wars that he has won. They've had crises that he has dealt with. And now he would sort of speak his own. But he doesn't. He remains Yehoshua, the same Yehoshua who, when Moshe heard speeches from Hashem, Yehoshua remained in the tent to hear them now from Moshe, is still that Yehoshua. He's quoting Moshe verbatim. He's calling him Moshe Eved Hashem, saying everything I did was from Moshe, the servant of God. He's still very much the student of Moshe. So he says to them, L'chu lachem. I thought that was very funny when he said that. In Pasuk Dalet, he said, Pinu u'l'chu lachem. Well, Pinu is turn. L'chu lachem. What's funny about that? Am I the only one who thinks it's honey? Yeah, thank you. Nanette has it. Lech Lecha. Right? Lech Lecha was telling Abraham, go into the land. Now he's saying, Lech Lecha, leave. Go east. I thought that was a funny turn of phrase. I didn't see anybody who commented on it, but I find it fascinating. Okay. So he says, okay, now time for you to go home. And then he says, make sure you follow all the mitzvos and the Torah, which was, if you were to go back to Perek Aleph, Pasuk Zayin, the same charge that God gave to Yehoshua, the same charge of following all of the mitzvos. But he needs to say it to them now because...
They're going across the river.
Exactly. Now you're decentralizing the Jewish people, and the question is, are they going to still remain Jewish? Yeah, I've had it any number of times where I've spoken with Israelis who had never been outside of Israel, and they had no concept of what a Jewish community looks like outside of Israel. Like, you know, in their mind, Jews who live outside of Israel are individuals living inside of large non-Jewish populations. Maybe they're allowed to wear a yarmulke, maybe they're not allowed to wear a yarmulke, but the idea of a coherent, cohesive community is completely foreign. How can that even be? You know, when you're outside of the land. And the truth of the matter is all such communities are doomed, and we know that. That's what exile means. It's destined to be so. Sorry. Maybe I said that stronger than people want to hear it. But the...
Confirm what we all think.
Sorry. But that's what Yoshua is afraid of. He's thinking, what's going to happen? They're going east of the Yarden. They're away from everybody else. You know, where are they going to be? So make sure that you hold on to the mitzvos. Or, as Abarbanel says, in another interesting twist of wording, in Pasuk Hey, it says, guard the mitzvah and the Torah. So Abarbanel says, mitzvah means practical commandments. Torah is beliefs. Okay. So Yeshua sends them home. So practical commandments means build a sukkah on sukkahs. Beliefs is Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. So Yeshua sends them home. The problem with Yeshua sending them home, and it seems like he sent them home, it says it, right? I mean, you can see it in Pasuk Vav, Vayishalchein Be'alchu Ala Haleihem, right? He sent them to their tents. Their tents doesn't mean their tents where they've been camped on the western side of the yard. It means home on the eastern side. The problem is, if you jump ahead to Pasuk Tet, we're going to be told, B'nai Reuben, B'nai Gad, and half of Manasseh went from Shiloh over to the other side of the Yarden. So I don't understand. Did they go in Pasuk Vav? No, but it's Reuven, in Ted, it's Reuven, Gad, and half of Manasseh. So that Mikra, yeah. But it's not what it says. Vayelchu, right? They went. If you have a different translation, let me know. But Vayelchu, I think, means and they went. So Dav Mikra offers a couple of explanations. One suggestion is that Vayelchu means they prepared to go. Which, no, it doesn't. But that's their first approach. The second approach is that they go, but there's a piece of the narrative that hasn't been told yet, and that's what we're going to see in Zion and Chet, in 7 and 8, where they talk about the spoils. So it's saying, and they went home. They also had a conversation with Yehoshua about the spoils. They went home, and it then picks up the story. So it's sort of just a little piece here that you know, didn't... Note. Yeah, it's a side note, and then we're going to recapture where we were in the story. Yeah, basically. I mean, we said they went.
I forgot to mention.
But, well, Kimmy, I forgot to mention, okay? Because when the Anshik Nes Sagdol are sitting there with this book, they have the option of saying, well, we could have mentioned this a sentence ago. So I think that it's...
Maybe they started to go. Maybe they went part way or something. Some of them went. Yeah, maybe that's what I'm saying. Manasseh didn't go the whole way.
Maybe it also says, maybe they went home and packed.
So that's what I would have thought. The problem is that it uses the term going to their ohel specifically for going to the eastern side. Because otherwise that would have been my first approach.
And where were they living in the
If you take a look at Pasuk Chet, when he says to them, Shuvu el ohalechem, he's clearly talking there about the eastern side of the Yarden. So it's that was my first instinct when I read this, but I don't think it's sustainable. Sorry, Ori, you're going to say?
I said, well, where were they living this whole time? How was this a side note?
Oh, just in the camp, in the in this
emptied out.
Yeah.
Or maybe they went emptied out area.
Yes. Sorry.
They went and they came back. Get the spoils.
They went and then they came back.
They had to go to there, and you're saying there should be twice.
Why did Elba have to be back to the western side?
Because when he tells them to go home, he uses the phrase "go to your." He says it back in Pasuk Dalet. He says "Vata pnu ulechu lachem le'ohaleichem," right? Alei ratzachu zatzchem. He says, go to your tents in the land that is your lot. And then again, in Pasuk Zion, it's going to say, Shilcham Yehoshua El Ahalehem. Right? And then in Chet, he's going to say, Shuvu El Ahalehem. He really does use it.
Maybe they might
be
back.
Maybe not
ever. Right, so that was what Shauna had just said. But I find that difficult to believe. Like, the traumatic trip to the eastern side of the Yarden. And keep in mind, this is not a...
prepare to battle to get those spoils.
I mean,
how long is that trip? It must not be a short trip.
It must not be a short trip, and there are 40,000 of them.
Yeah, that's unlikely, right?
You know,
took the men, the women, and children there.
How they get over
they
the
came
river?
Back to fight together.
Correct. The women and children are always on the eastern side.
How they get over
the river? Say,
if they had no split.
They were very happy.
And what about the men who were married when they left? And couldn't there be women and children?
How did they get over the river? I'm sorry, this is dumb question.
So,
a lot of questions.
They swim.
No, the answer is that they walked. I mean, they walked, they swam, whatever they did, you know, for maybe built pontoon bridges. But the first time round, they had a miracle. We don't know anything about any miracle on this trip. But keep in mind, this is only a warrior group. Meaning, we don't know exactly who stays home, except that we know that the women and children stay home, because that's explicitly mentioned in the Chumash. That they build pastures for their sheep, and they build homes for the for their wives and their children to live in. That's all taken care of, right? Gidros son of Nelabapenu power in Latapenu. One expects that they also had the men who were not of military age living at home. So all the men who in the beginning had been under the age of 20 are now up to 34, right? The men who had been over the age of 60, if there were any, because remember they died in the Midbar. So it's really just this younger group that has now aged into this. Was there also a group that stayed in order to just be warriors? Yes. The way we know, actually, that that's true is because we did get a census. We were told in Perek Dalet Pasuk Yud Gimel. I don't happen to know that by heart, but it's in my notes because of something else that's coming up. The Perek Dalet Pasuk Yud Gimel says, Ka'arba'im elef halutzei tzava avru, 40,000 warriors crossed. Now keep in mind that in the census in Parshas Pinchas, the average size of a shevet, just counting the men of military age, the average size of a shevet was somewhere in the 40,000 range, 40 to 45,000 range, as I recall. There were some who were very large, 60 to 70, and then there was Shimon who had gone down to 22. But the point is, 2.5 tribes, and out of them you had 40,000 men of military age, means that's another 40,000 or so stayed home. Give or take 40 to 50,000, whatever it is, stayed home. So it's not as though all of them had crossed the Arden. There was a group that stayed home. So the answer is they sent some, but they needed to protect their wives and children living on the eastern edge of Israel.
Your wife and kids for 14 years, all that is worth it to get good grass?
Very good grass.
14 years, you just had a kid, you don't even know them. They're an adult already.
Well, you're not much of a shepherd.
I'm not much of a shepherd.
You have to know what grass is worth.
Would it be that some of them went and then their ones didn't all go in the beginning? Because he talks about here, he called Yoshua Reuben and whatever got. And then in the next part it says B'nai. So maybe the young people stayed back and went afterwards.
Interesting. We often use B'nai just to mean members of a shevet, but it is funny that it changes the terminology within the same chapter.
Could some of them have gone back?
Right. So it's an interesting suggestion that Ruth is making, that maybe the answer really is that there were shifts. In other words, 40,000 went initially, and then there was some kind of an exchange going on. We don't find any mention of it, but it wouldn't be crazy.
The distance is doable.
Let's say it takes a week to get home. Isn't it worth going, or traveling for a week to be able to go home and not just be, away from home for 14 years?
They would go back for a year, a weekend.
Well, Moshe's condition was 7. Yoshua added another, but Yoshua added it before they crossed the Arden. Now, I think it's an interesting idea, the question of whether they were in shifts. I don't know. I can't prove that it didn't happen.
Because otherwise there wouldn't have been any more children.
Well, there would have been, because you had the men who had been 20 who are now 34.
Some families wouldn't have had any more children.
For all we know, when the men came back, the wives said, actually, things are great. You can,
Because of the long
term. Yeah,
I
mean, if they were gone for 14 years, their families would have fallen apart.
Well, that's the question, is what's going on in this scene? Right. And these are all good questions, which we're not given adequate. No, I have no answer. I haven't seen it discussed. It doesn't mean no one asks it, but I haven't seen the answer. It's an interesting conversation. It's a valid point. This story is difficult. There's no two ways about it. I think that you solve a lot if you accept the idea that there was some kind of a platooning going on, in which some of them went and some of them came home. We do know for sure that not all of the men of military age went in that initial trip. You know that 40,000 is not the full number. So that's information we have. The only question is, was it a static 40? Or was it, now we're sending 40, and then they'll just, change out over time.
Did we think they were in contact? Because, also people could be killed in battle, and then...
Right, and the answer is, I don't know.
Like, widows and orphans, so they don't necessarily...
There are no other numbers you're saying in this parent.
Correct. I would hope they're in contact.
14 years later.
Right, I would hope they're in contact. But I can't, I can't prove it to you.
What?
Right. So, if I find something on it, I'll let you know. But right now, I got nothing. Yehoshua says in Pasuk Zayin, Pasuk Chet, he says that he wants them to split the spoils, and he speaks specifically to half of Menashe. So that's something that that requires some explanation. As we said, why are they getting special treatment? And then the other problem is, look at the wording. It says that in Zion, it said half of Menashe, right? Moshe gave them Bashan on the eastern side. Half of them he gave them on the western side of the Yarden. V'gam ki shelcham Yehoshua el ohaleihem v'yivarchem. That phrase, v'gam ki shelcham Yehoshua, is very hard to translate. I think last time when we just read through the Pesukim, I asked people to read out their translations, and the translations were not literal. That was basically the answer. You can't translate this literally, because translating it literally doesn't turn into English. And also, for Yehoshua sent them to their tents and blessed them. I don't know what that phrase means.
And there's a funny trope over the begum.
Oh, no, it's a regular one.
It's a trope. It's like a
doo-doo-doo,
like, as opposed to a flat trope.
Oh.
It's like a pay-attention-to-me trope.
Oh, maybe. I'm not sure.
They get preferential treatment because they...
I hear you, but I'm not sure. I'm sorry?
Did they get the preferential treatment because they didn't want to be there in the first place?
Right, so now we have to ask this question of what the story is and why they would be treated differently, as well as why are they getting a second bracha. Because it says again, Vayivarachim, when he already gave them a bracha. So, two different approaches. Approach number one is that actually, that part of it, the Gam Ki Shelcham Yehoshua La Halehem Vayivarachim, is talking about everybody. In other words, what it said is, Yehoshua split Menashe, which we needed to say, because remember, Menashe wasn't part of the original deal. Menashe didn't ask to go to the eastern side of the Yarden, so now we're saying, and Yehoshua split them. And he sent everybody to their tents, meaning go home, and he gave them a bracha. So why is it that they're being sent a second time then? And why are they getting a brand new bracha? So take a look at source number two, a Medrash in Bereishis Rabbah, which suggests that they actually asked to go twice, or they left twice. Rabbi Yitzchak, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yudin Giyori, Halchu Lishmoa Torah Merabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Rabbi Yitzchak, Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yudin Giyori. Giyori would be a term for somebody who converted. Giyori literally sounds like a plural, as in all three of these people described here are Geirim, but I'm not sure that that's actually what's meant. I'm not sure. It might just be Rabbi Yudin. So they went to learn Torah from Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Is the Amri Parshas Nedarim, the Is the Amri Parshas Nesachim, different explanations about what it was that they were supposed to be learning there. The Naloim and Rishus. But when they were done, they asked him for permission to depart. The Himtinu Sham Odiom Echad. But they then waited another day after he had already permitted. For whatever reason, they got held up, they decided to wait another day. So then they want to go home. Amru, they said, Tzrichen anu litol mimenu rishus pam shenis. Is it disrespectful if we just go now? Maybe we should ask permission again. So chad min hon darash. So one of them taught the following lesson. V'amar lahon kvar ksiv. V'yivarachem Yehoshua, v'yishalachem, v'yalchu le'ohaleihem. Ma tamalomar gam kishalcham Yehoshua le'ohaleihem v'yivarachem. He asks our question. It says he blessed them and sent them home. So why does it then say, also, he sent them home and he blessed them? Ela b'shashah Yisrael mechabshim u'mechalkim es ha'aretz ha'yashevet ru'uvein v'gad iman v'asu yud dalet shana. The answer is, they were there for 14 years during the conquest and division of the land. Nalu reshus min Yehoshua l'alechas la'alehem. They got permission to go home. V'shau sham od yamim acherim. But then they waited longer. They didn't go home right away. V'chazu v'nalu min reshus od pam shnia. And then they had to ask again. And therefore, v'gam kishulcham, he in fact sent them twice out of respect. They asked a second time. And that's one approach. And then you get a second approach in the same medrash. Rabbi Yudin says a different answer. You have a different problem. Going back to the first parak in Yehoshua, okay, so those who were here from the beginning, going back to the first parak in Yehoshua, you'll remember that Reuven and Gad come to Yehoshua and say, we're going to be your enforcers. If anybody disobeys, you know, we're going to take care of it. That's what they tell him. So this Medrash seizes on that and says, these are Yehoshua's entourage. That's what they've been. Livo Sanar Yarden. So Yehoshua accompanies them. These are the people he's gotten to know best. He escorts them back to the Yarden. V'kivin shirosh nismata pamalya shalom. But then they see that once they go, Yeshua doesn't have people with him. He's the leader of the Jewish people. It's not right for him to just travel alone, you know, going back home. So v'chazru v'livu osoad beso. They went back to his house, and then he sent them home again. It's a it actually fits. Interestingly, if you take this view that it's everybody involved here, take a look at Pasuk Chet, at the bracha that he gives them. He says, "Binachasim rabim shuvu ala halechem." Go back home with great assets, great wealth. Uvemikne rav meod, and with a lot of cattle. Right? Mikne Rav Ma'od. The whole discussion about living on the eastern side of the Yarden started with the observation, Umikne Rav Hayalivne Rugen Ruvne Ruven Vilivne Gadatsu Ma'od, that Ruven and Gad had a lot of cattle. And so now what he's saying is, and now you have Rav Ma'od. See that? You have grown because you did what you were supposed to do. So that's one way to take this passage, that there is either they're asking a second time to go, because out of respect they didn't get out of the way the first time, or alternatively they started to go but then they came back and then they had to go a second time. The problem with this, yeah,
how bad is that? It's like walking someone home, you know, through the park at night. You want to make sure they're okay, and then they walk you because you're alone.
Right,
exactly. And then they just walk without
making any sense.
I mean, the answer is we do this, but it doesn't make sense.
Right,
yes.
It doesn't make sense, but it's respectful for Yeshua. Like it's a,
the problem that I have
when
with it.
When they leave, when they left, they realize that nobody's coming back. Right, okay.
Yeah, we've never done strange things like that. No, the whole shave it, nobody realized.
No, because Yeshua took them to the Arden. Like, they saw that they wanted to be back in his house, so they...
Right. Now, it's possible... But there's no way around the fact that it's strange. And it's strange because it adds to the text in ways that really are not visible here. In other words, it's not as though it says the second time that they were at the Yardin. But there are things that are missing. It's hard to see this within the Psukim. It does seem like a significant leap. So the second approach, which is the approach taken by Malbim, taken by the Dan Mikra.
They left him, and he thought they were leaving, and they just didn't.
Right, that's the first answer. He thought they were going. They didn't go, and then they came back and said, "Could we go?" The problem with that also, though, is so why were they sticking around? It's been 14 years. Like, for now, you need to make it 14 in a day, unless we take the platooning approach, right? In which case, they haven't been on ship that long.
Okay, well, if it was 14 years, they can't just pick up and leave. They gotta get this all ready, and then you have 14 years of stuff to. Say goodbye to people that you've been with, or who knows what.
Maybe.
And then they didn't get to go yet, so then they went back and asked for permission. Okay, now can we go? I don't know.
Right, Yeshua said, you're leaving at 9 o'clock, and lo and behold, 9 o'clock rolls around, and nobody's ready, and they,
Jewish.
Right.
Unless he said...
He should have told them 8 o'clock, and then they would have gotten out.
And he said, well, you can go, kind of, just as a principle. And then they said, well, you know, are we allowed to go now, like right this minute?
Right. And it's possible. You could read it this way. The other approach, though, I have to admit, I'm partial to, is that this is part of the half Menashe speech, which started in Zion anyway. In other words, Zion started with saying that Yeshua split up Menashe and gave half on the east side and half on the west. Say that the rest of this follows from there. When it says V'gam kishocham Yeshua, that Yeshua sent them, it means the half of Menashe that we're talking about. He sent them to the other side. And yes, they got a special bracha. Why do they get a special bracha? Two reasons are offered. One is the Dat Mikra, and that's what Ora had suggested before, because they weren't part of the original request. They weren't the ones who wanted the eastern side of the Yarden in the first place. And not only that, not only does that mean you have to maybe bribe them a little bit and say, here's some, you know, you get extra share of the spoils. Sorry?
Flattery.
Well, it's not as much flattery as money. The other piece of it is, if you're Reuven and Gad, and you said, we want to be on the eastern side of the Yarden, by doing that, you have surrendered your share of the spoils on the western side of the Yarden. Like, okay, fine. Be on the eastern side. And then everybody else is splitting up whatever comes from all those kings on the western side. Menashe never made that request. They have a right to extra shares. And so that's one approach. That's the Dat Mikra's approach.
They should help fight. They should deserve the spoils. They were warriors.
That was the price for getting everything they got on the eastern side. It's not like they didn't get anything there. There were all those kings, Sihon and Og, who they defeated on the eastern side. You know, and that was their deal. Once you make that request, you have forfeited your rights. I like that. That's not Mikra. Malbim says, it's a different point. He says, Reuven and Gad made the request, as I just mentioned before, because they have Mikneh Rav. They had a lot of cattle, so they're happy on the eastern side. Well, it's just, Menashe didn't make that request. They don't have all of this, and therefore they get a share here to compensate them for that fact. So you can read this either way. What we're saying is, and again, there's always a risk when you do a tight read of the psukim that you lose track of the bigger picture. So I want to make sure that we get the bigger picture here. The Shvatim, Reuven, Gad, and half of Menashe are blessed by Yoshua. He sends them to go home. In terms of the spoils, Yoshua splits half of Menashe for the eastern side. He then either sends everybody home again, or he sends half of Menashe home. If it's the latter, then when he says to them, now go back home and go with a lot of cattle, and go back home with silver and gold and copper and iron and clothing, right? Divide up all of the spoils of your enemy with your brothers. So with your brothers either means with Reuven and Gad. I gave you a bunch of stuff, now split it with Reuven and Gad. Or it means split it with everybody who stayed on the other side. Split it with the people, you know, who stayed on the eastern side to guard the family. Right? That's where Malbim says what I brought you in source number 3. This is how I knew it was Perek Dalet Pasuk Yud Gimel. Malbim says, first, bin chasim rabim, you get to go home with great wealth. Ki mikne rav hayil of Reuven v'Gad v'lo lachatzi Menashe, because Reuven and Gad were the ones who had the wealth. Menashe didn't. And then he said, chilku, split it, right, divide it. Perish im acheihem, shenish rulish moris areihem. You should divide it up along with your brothers who stayed behind to guard the cities. Ki rak arboim elef mehem avruas hayardein, as we said, only 40,000 crossed the Yardain. Shem pachos mishlish mimisparam. If I had read further, I would have been able to tell you. It's less than one third of their number, the Parshas Pinchas. So that's who they're told to split it with. There's another approach that it's...
Wasn't that 40,000 of all the tribes,
you were
saying?
Not just yes.
40,000 of Russia.
Correct.
Like, here it makes it sound like it was 40,000
of... Oh, because, right, because Malbim is of the school... Actually, no, that doesn't work. The, But, no, but, right, he's only bringing this point to show that there are those who remain to guard on the other side.
Okay, all of them.
Oh, no, but you know, I think I understand what you're saying. What you're saying is the people who stayed on the other side aren't any of Menashe. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm just saying it's almost
right, I'm not sure
like 40,000 Menashe stayed, but you were saying 40,000 Reuven, Gad, and Menashe stayed.
But, you know, well, no, 40,000 neither. 40,000 of Reuven, Gad, and Menashe came west of the Yardin, right?
Right.
Right.
Okay. But there's another two-thirds of that amount.
Right.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying it almost sounds like it's referring only to Menashe,
that
40,000.
Right. No, so that wouldn't be. Correct.
At what point was it decided that Menashe would stay on the other side, then? Because if they didn't ask, so why would they...
Right. So the right. Already in Chumash, they're mentioned as part of those who are going to stay on the eastern side of the Yardin. They're not in the original request, but it appears, the story appears 3 times, I think, in Chumash, and by the second time, I think they're already in the group that's going to be staying on the eastern side. So, the and there's another approach that says split it means split it with the people who are staying on in Canaan, people who are staying on the western side. So Menashe has to split it with themselves, so to speak. Here, I'm giving you wealth, but don't take all of it home. But to summarize what we have, out of this section is they're going home. They're finally going back. Whether they've been back and forth or not now is a question, which I want to look into and see if I can find any material on. But they're going home with Yoshua's brachos, possibly going once, possibly going twice. And that brings us to Pasuk Tet, sentence 9. And this is where the story begins. Vayashuvu vayelchu b'nei Reuven u'b'nei Gad v'chatzi shevet ha-Menashe. Again, you know, they set out again to leave. as we've already noted. But this time, Me'ez B'nei Yisrael Mishiloh. They're leaving from Shiloh, right? Site of the Mishkan, central focus, place of worship, and so forth. Malbim had said, the original conversation was in Timnat Serach. Actually, in source number 4, I brought you the Malbim there. The original conversation was in Timnat Serach, but then they went to Shiloh to Davin, as well as gain permission from the Jews who were gathered there. And then they went, that's the Vayashuvu, separate from going twice before. This is now sort of a third time. Fine. Laleches el Eretz HaGilad. They go to the land of the Gilad. Why Gilad in particular? So if you remember the geography, which you don't have to, but Da Mikra says it, Gilad is a central region which includes parts of Reuven, Gad, and Menashe. So they go to the land of the Gilad, meaning that's their sort of central overlapping region from which they'll then spread to go to the different to their different areas south and north. So they go to Gil, to the land of the Gilad, El Eretz Achuzasam, to their portion Asher Nochazu Ba, that they had taken Al Pi Hashem V'Yad Moshe. Right. This is why they're there, because God said that they are able to be there. It reiterates they're going with good intentions. Everything is positive. Vayavo el Gililos Hayarden Asher Be'eretz Kinan. So at this point, someone has a really bad idea. They came to an area of the Yarden, Gililot Hayarden. That Mikra says is the plains by the Yarden in Kinan, meaning they're still on the western side. Vayivnu v'nei Reuven u'v'nei Gad v'chatzi shevet haManashe sham mizbeach al Hayarden mizbeach gadol l'mareh. Reuven, Gad, and half of Menashe build an altar on the Canaan side in Gililot HaYarden, right? I jumped. They build a Mizbeach. Mizbeach Gadol Limar'eh. Really, really big, so that everybody can see it. Somebody sat down and said, I know, let's build a Mizbeach. Why is this a bad idea? Sorry? When did they try this already?
I mean, the building
half. Well, that's the question, right? What is this?
Well, are you not allowed to build a mizbeach once the Mishkan is in Shiloh?
Correct. We talked about this a little bit when we learned about Shiloh initially, and we said once the Mishkan in Shiloh is built, bamot, private altars, are prohibited. You're not allowed to have your own mizbeach. But somebody clearly thought this was a good idea.
Because they're so far from Shiloh.
Ah, so maybe, because we're going to be over on, you know, on the eastern side.
But they built it on the western side.
Yeah, it's still there.
Right, so Ruth and Alina point out, it doesn't make any sense to think that this is a Mizbeah for use, because it's on the wrong side of the Yarden.
Why is it so big? Why the emphasis?
And it's huge. The Mizbeah in the Mishkan is 3 amos tall. Right? Ramosha Feinstein measures an amma as 21.6 inches. Right, that's a different number in centimeters, but I don't know because it keeps changing with the Canadian dollar. It's not this tall. What you're talking about is roughly 1.75 feet, right? Times 3. So what you're talking about is a mizbeach, the one in the Mishkan. I'm not talking about the one that they built. The one in the Mishkan could never be called gadol lemareh. You know, big so that everybody can see it. They build this monumental mizbeach, and we stress here that it is a very large mizbeach, and that's how everybody else is going to find out that they've done this. But they build it on the western side of the Yarden.
Are they actually making sacrifices on this?
Does it say they did?
No. Yeah. I'm saying maybe it was just like a symbolic, show as a monument.
Yeah. Maybe. Maybe indeed, and right. It could be. It's a monument. It is described as being really big for people to see it.
Thank you.
Yeah, it is. As a showpiece is the English.
Right. So that's tricky because that's commentary more than translation.
Right. And thank you. And this will be like see ya.
Could be.
You should just take 12 stones.
Right, make 12 stones.
And, 12
right, that would have been smart. This is really dangerous. So look what happens in Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vayishmeu b'nei Yisrael le'mor, hine, banu b'nei Reuben b'nei Gad v'chatzi shevet ha-Menashe es ha-Mizbeach amul eretz Kinan ugli los ha-Yarden el Eber b'nei Yisrael. Word gets back to them, you know, there's this other Mizbeach that they just built. Vayishmeu b'nei Yisrael, Pasuk Yud Bet, sentence 12. Vayishmeu b'nei Yisrael, and Israel heard. Vayikohalu kol adas b'nei Yisrael shilo, la'alos aleihem latzava. They heard, and they call up the army. They gather at Shiloh, and they are ready to fight.
They like just left.
Yeah. Now, interesting note, it says about Yishmeu, how many times? How many times did they hear?
Twice.
Why twice? So, the Dot Mikra says, don't get all worked up about it. It's they heard all this news. Now it describes what it was that they heard, and they heard, and this is what they did. You know, it's just the way it speaks.
Sort of when they heard.
Well, yeah. It's saying that when they heard and they gathered, that it made them gather.
So the Malbim suggests something along those lines. He says the second heard is the hearing, is hearing that goes with judging. They heard now and they did something. But I like what Abarbanel has to say here. Source number 5. Remember that we've said there are dual aspects going on in this whole story. There are two layers to this. We said before there is the loyalty to the people and the loyalty to God. So Abarbanel writes in source number 5, Al shtei b'chinos ha'ela me'achet, Amar shtei pa'amim v'yishmu'u b'nei Yisrael. He says there are two aspects to the sin, and therefore it says twice, and Israel heard. What are the two aspects to the sin? First, it said that they heard dot 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 opposite Israel, kiilu asu rosh bifnei atzman, as though they had set their own head, meaning we're off as our own people. Vezel amro el aver bnei Yisrael, as it says opposite Israel. The first thing they heard was that these people think they're a different nation. Then, the second aspect of it, was their sin against God. Amar Pam Shinit, it said a second time, they heard and they gathered to Shiloh, to the Mishkan, the place of God. Because there are two offenses here. One, you're breaking away from the Jewish people. And two, you're breaking away from the Mishkan and Shiloh, which is where you're supposed to bring your offerings to God.
It's interesting because that was their last stop before they left.
Yes, which is exactly the point.
But they didn't bring offerings. That's the whole point.
That's true also, although, you know, absence doesn't mean that they're not going to. You know, the point that I think is being sort of underscored every step of the way here is the Shvatim, the other 9.5, should have known that this was nothing. They should have been cognizant of the fact that this was like 10.5, I suppose, because we're counting Menashe as one. So, they should have realized that nothing was going on here. Number one, it's too big. Number two, it didn't mention them bringing any offerings. Number three, it's on the western side of the Yarden. And number four, they just left from Shiloh and they went to go back al pi Hashem because God said so. Wait, how many times have we stressed that this is Moshe and Hashem, Moshe and Hashem? They did everything they were supposed to do. These are good guys.
So why are they jumping to conclusions so quickly against their, you know?
What do you think?
Well, they were very happy about it.
No, think about it.
Why does it seem to say that?
They were afraid that when they, as soon as they left, they would reject.
I think that there's this great fear about the division of the nation. That's what this is about. And this is, you know, beginning of the end. I don't think the Agel can be that strong in their consciousness at this stage, just because, remember, there's a new generation and it's 40 years later. I think the Meraglim may be a bigger issue, frankly. You know, like the Meraglim didn't want to be in the land and look what happened as a result and so forth. And remember, when Reuben and Gad first came to Moshe and said, we want to be on the eastern side, Moshe, you know, flipped his lid, so to speak. Right? It's hard to say that about Moshe. But Moshe said, oh, you're going to do this? You remember what your ancestors did? You sinners, you've risen up in place of your ancestors. Right? You're going to get God angry. You're going to get God upset. And God, as a result, is going to leave us in the desert for another generation. I got 40 more years as a result of this. I think it's more sort of reminiscent of the Maraglan to Moshe, and that's what causes them to be so nervous about what's going on. I think it's a combination of the Maraglan concern, which was part of Bnei Gad and Reuven in the first place. That's number one. And number two, just as we said, the major challenge you're facing as 2.5 tribes are going off to the eastern side is the fear that you decentralize the nation, they start to see themselves as something separate. Religiously also, they start to see themselves as something separate. The irony is going to be that Reuven, Gad, and Menashe are thinking the same thing. And that's what we're going to see, you know, next. But that's very much on their mind, is this fear of dividing everybody up.
Why didn't they just go talk to Yahshua and let him clear everything up, as opposed to starting to, I just was reading, sending Pinchas and what, why did it end up being that, especially since everything we heard, Yahshua was very close to them. We knew that, so why wouldn't he be the first person they would go and speak to?
Interesting. So we don't know actually anything about Yahshua in this story.
All of a sudden, we don't know anything about Yahshua.
Yahshua disappears. Who else is going? Who else are they going to go to? Since you had a couple of seconds. Yeah.
Pinchas.
Pinchas and representatives of each Shevet, correct.
Is that still the same Pinchas?
Same one.
He's still alive?
Still alive. I have news for you. He's not going away. He's going to show up again. Remember the Medrash of Pinchas being Eliyahu and so forth?
But he must have been an old man.
Not really.
Because, it's at least 40 years.
Keep in mind, Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen, he's the grandson of Aaron. Yes. Had Aaron lived, at this point, Aaron would be 137. He is Aaron's grandson.
Right. Okay. But I mean, that
you don't
original
know.
Story with Pinchas was at least 40 years ago.
No, it wasn't. The story with Pinchas. The story with Pinchas was the last year in the Midbar. That was the last year in the Midbar. 14 years before this.
Oh, the 40 years didn't start after.
14? No, the jump to year 40 is in Parshas Chukas. So Pinchas, no. And we know that Pinchas is born after the decree making Aaron's family Kohanim. Because that's the whole thing about him not being a Kohen until then, and Hashem makes him a Kohen in Parshas Pinchas. So Pinchas is not that old at this stage. He will be the last time we see him. But not at this stage. So they're going to go to Pinchas rather than to Yahshua, and I think that is actually the perfect question with which to end right now, because I think we're hitting on. Sorry?
I think maybe they went to Pinchas because there was an issue with the Mizbeah and worshiping Hashem, so maybe they felt that she was Kohen at the time, and she not to Yahshua.
Could be. Well, that's what we're going to have to address. So we have a lot of questions. Questions of what they were thinking in doing this on the eastern side. Questions about what the nation was thinking in being ready to go to war. And ultimately, what's going to happen? I don't blame you if you get so, if you can't sleep tonight and you just say, I have to read the end of the paragraph.